I hope that we'll be able to have lots of interaction and that you'll be able to leave this workshop with a clear sense of how you might be able to encourage others or be able to use film yourself in outreach and evangelism. My name's Tom Price. I've been working in this area. I'm a philosopher, theologian. I've been working in this area of training people in evangelism and particularly training them in how to use film in evangelism for about 20 years now. I did one of my first talks ever as a fairly new Christian. What were they doing letting me speak? But I did a kind of review of the film Bruce Almighty, and I was contrasting different views of sovereignty with God clearly revealing himself in that film. And how Bruce, you know, was praying, wasn't he? Show me a sign, show me a sign. And then this whole van of signs drove out in front of him. Don't turn this way, turn around, you know, don't go this way. And he still didn't see it. And I was always intrigued about the use of the visual and the way that film could do things that I didn't think other communications mediums could do. For me, partly, this is personal, because part of my journey to faith came through watching secular movies. And watching them, I felt less alone, and I felt like there were other people who validated my questions, that the movies and the movie makers were reflecting back to me some of, and obviously they had the same questions too, I didn't know them, but these were human questions that I was asking. What is purpose? What's reality? How can we find answers? What's truth? Is there anything worth living for? Can we hang on to love? These sorts of very personal human questions I found all over cinema. Now, let's just pause briefly and glance towards a theology of using film and evangelism. We could turn to Acts chapter 17, where the Apostle Paul engages with the Epicurean materialists and the Stoics and the general Greek Gentiles, as well as all the Jews around in ancient Athens, and how he connects into their world, both practically by going where they are in the marketplace, in the agora, but also by engaging with the things that they, the concepts and the stories and the things they were living for. The altar to the unknown God. He quotes Aratus, in him we live and move and have our being. He quotes Epimenides, for we are his offspring. And actually, if what we have is a summary of the speech that he recounted to Luke, as Luke wrote down Acts, it takes about 2 or 3 minutes to read out Acts 17. How many different connections must there have been in the full version? It's quite exciting. There could have been maybe 100. We know that Paul had the tendency to talk for quite a long time. One time, somebody had to be resuscitated because he talked for so long, somebody fell asleep and fell out of a window. So there's Acts 17 we could use as a basis. But I have been noticing over the years a fear in believers sometimes that if we engage with culture, we might get dirty, that we might compromise, that we might get influenced by the world. And I want to recognize that, and I want to show how Scripture recognizes that same fear. But at the same time as recognizing that fear, I want to show you that Scripture also says that we should be in the world engaging with it. And that's found in 1 Peter chapter 2. It's found in all sorts of places. You can find it in the story of Daniel. You can find it in the story of Jesus and the apostles. You can find it in Paul and Peter and the early church. But here's another example in Peter's recommendation to the distributed and spread church in Asia Minor. He says, "Dear friends, I urge you as aliens and strangers in the world to abstain from sinful desires which war against your soul. Live such good lives among the pagans that although they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits us." So clearly their location here is in the world. So I think this, combined with Acts 17, begins to help us build a bit of a theology of engagement. We could say a lot more about this. In fact, a lot more has been said. But this seminar is not about just constructing a biblical basis, a theological basis for cultural engagement. It's about how to actually do it. So let's begin. So that was a short film. You may not have seen it before. It was made by a friend of mine who came through some apologetics training that we run in Oxford. And he started to ask, how could I use my skills as an emerging filmmaker to create pieces of art that would get people thinking about the big questions of life? So there's your first example of how we can use film in outreach. We can use short films. That film is, and a whole collection of other films that he's made are freely available through, if you go to Owl in Space. Owl in Space. You'll find it on YouTube, and you'll be able to download it. You'll be able to use it. He would encourage you to use it. So that's one way we can use film and evangelism. So what that film actually is saying is we need to grow a little bit in confidence in being able to say, I think this was about that, because then we can begin to have conversations about it. So that was a film, clearly a film about lenses, about worldview, how we bring a lens to things, and it used a number of different illustrations in the way it did that. So this concept of worldview is something worth picking up briefly. We each have a lens. It's something we talk about quite a lot in outreach and evangelism and in reaching people and in mission. And this lens shapes the way we see the world. Wittgenstein, philosopher, talked about the underlying web of belief that shapes the way we see reality. Now, film has the potential to sort of jostle the soil a bit, to sort of mix up the soil, to take compacted soil and to open it up, a bit like poetry has the potential to sort of just open things up a little bit. So I think that one of the ways that film can function in lots of different deployments, we can use it in lots of different ways. We can use short films, we can use long films, we could play it in all kinds of ways. And we're going to talk about that in a moment. But conceptually, what we're trying to do is we're trying to get people to reflect and to think about the lens that they see the world through. We're trying to get them to think about how they see themselves and the world and other people. And in doing that, we are having a different conversation than if we're using the film to just preach at them. Okay? I'll talk about preachy films in a moment, but what do you think are some examples of how we can use film in evangelism? I'll give you a few. Here is a few just to sort of trigger your memory or to give you a few ideas. So you could show Christian films, and by this I mean things like, I hesitate to name any because I don't want to be mean to Christian movies because some of them are really well-intended, but they're the kind of Christian culture kind of movies with the baddies that are not really very threatening at all and with the goodies who are a little bit perfect and their transformation is a little bit too instantaneous and unbelievable and flawless. You know the ones I mean, right? I do think there are some good Christian movies. In the category of good Christian movies at the moment, I would put Gran Torino, Clint Eastwood, The Revenant, where DiCaprio won an Oscar for that one. I think that's a Christian movie. I would argue it is through its symbolism. Into the water, clinging to the stick, through the dark thing with an unknown stranger for 3 days, then comes back to life, is saved by a miracle through the sacrifice. Anyway, I don't want to spoil the film. So The Revenant, The Case for Christ, Lee Strobel's story, is actually quite a good Christian movie. But to be honest, if you're seeking to reach out, you probably want to leave Christian movies out of the picture. You want to go to the culture where people are, because that's what the Apostle Paul did, that's what Jesus did, that's the model. So we don't want to do kind of cultural imperialism where we're sort of saying come to Christian culture all the time. We want to go to where people are. Okay.
Could you put something like Silence?
Silence, I would say that's, you know, Scorsese working out his faith. That, I would say, isn't a Christian film in its final conclusion. Because of the, you know, thing in the hand, just kind of barely clinging on. It's not really the faith that I think we get in the New Testament. I would put that in secular movies. I would put that, you know, a director, Scorsese, who has Catholic influence, who's working that out in his films in various ways, but I would put that in secular film. Definitely an influence there, definitely an influence, sort of a bit of both. The other category here you might have noticed is docu-evangelism, and this is where you have a story of perhaps a Christian in discussion with people, and that can be a really great way of doing it. I'd just love to highlight to you a new documentary that's been made about the story of John Lennox, Professor John Lennox. It's called Against the Tide, and it's now out. You can get it and you can show it. It's on streaming. You can order it from Amazon or from their website. It's really actually quite good. It's quite, it's not overstated. It doesn't kind of over-egg it. It's subtle, as film ought to be, actually. Sometimes it's about saying a bit less with film in order to respect the integrity of the medium. We often try to get films to say a bit too much. We can also show full secular films. We can show an entire secular film. You can put on a film like you were mentioning in your film club. That's another way of doing it. We can have film festivals, a sort of extension of the film club idea, where we have a weekend or we have a season where we show loads of different films. You could do this in the lead up to Easter. My church a couple of years ago in Oxford decided they would put on 4 famous films about Jesus's passion as lenses and ways into for people to approach the whole theme of Easter and the crucifixion. That was a really popular thing. People came just for those film viewings. We had like a 10-minute discussion after it. It was fun. I think there's another way of approaching film and sort of getting into the question of genres, and it's a way of talking about film where you look at how different genres of film, different types of film, raise specific questions. I haven't heard anybody else really talking about this that much, but think about detective fiction, for example, detective stories. They are an attempt, often, for human beings who want to bring order and justice to the world to have to figure out what human beings have done in their broken human nature and who are trying to hide the truth. And detectives are trying to find out what happened, or scientific detectives now we quite often have, or various different spins on it. So in many ways, the genre of detective fiction is about wrestling with human nature in order to find the truth. We might say romantic comedies are about chasing and finding and hanging onto and clinging onto love and what love is. There are all sorts of genres, and they raise specific questions about film. I think I've put some notes in the handout that should be through the app if you want some more examples of genres. Then there's this category of thematic film essays, which is actually quite big on YouTube, which is where you create a thematic discussion of a topic like purpose or finding truth or are we alone in the universe? Or what's the future with technology and human beings going to look like? And you pursue a number of different films and you draw kind of interpretation and reading from the different films. And you sort of have a discussion about that. You use it to raise those questions. That's another way of approaching it, thematic film essays. And they can be deployed online. You could just sort of release them. Or you could actually deploy them as part of an event. So I did one event in All Souls Church in Langham Place in London, and we turned the whole, Rico Tice did this big evangelistic event, and we did it around, it was when the Lord of the Rings films were coming out, and we did a big discussion of destiny and purpose in Lord of the Rings. We showed clips, then we had small group discussion, showed some more clips, talked about the themes of destiny and purpose in philosophy, talked about a bit of Greek understanding of it in philosophy, the fates, and the Morai, and then we sort of ground that in and sort of then opened up to a Q&A, and I landed it in a bit of, you know, gospel explanation, and then we had open Q&A. So you can sort of take that to be as evangelistic as you like, or you can just use it as a conversation starter. You could have a sort of 5-minute thing or an hour and a half event. You can choose how you do it. Your creativity here is actually something that could be totally released. And that's another thing I want to encourage, creativity in evangelism. The other types of ways of using film, we've got this one, film clips in talks already, but there's the use of short films. I've already demonstrated that through the use of the film Lens by Owl in Space. The other way I do it is I will use clip-based film discussions, and I'm going to give you an experience of that in about 2 minutes' time. I'll just get into that right now. But before I do that, the last one is sometimes I don't actually, you know, go through the whole business of showing the film or showing a clip. I'll just say to my friends, hey, did you see the new Batman film? Here's an interesting article on it. What did you think of it? What did you think of the moment in the new Batman film where Batman says, what people need is not revenge, but hope? What did you think of that? Isn't that relevant to where we are in the middle of this pandemic at that point, or coming out of it, or looking at, you know, global instabilities? And my friend then responded and said, yeah, it got me thinking too. And the conversation's away. We've just used the film as a sort of just a touch point to get the conversation going. So there are all sorts of ways you can do it, depending on what's appropriate. Think of it as a toolbox that you can reach into and use in lots and lots of different ways. So what do I mean by a clip-based film discussion? Here's a film. Stranger Than Fiction, directed by Mark Foster, starring Will Ferrell. Now, in this story, there's an tax inspector called Harold Crick. Now, his life is quite humdrum. It's quite sort of, we might say, a bit boring. This clip gives us an insight into the sorts of things that satisfy Harold Crick's character. Now, what you can do is you could go on like this, and then you can play another clip, and then have another discussion, and then get people to reflect a bit more on the topic, and you could introduce a comment, maybe a bit of social analysis or something that links it and begins to sort of get you towards sort of discussing a biblical notion of purpose. You maybe could even link it to passages where Jesus declares that he has a purpose and his purpose is to serve the Father, and that through him serving the Father, he gives us a purpose. You could sort of follow the thread of purpose and land it in the aspect of the gospel that connects with the question that the film raises. And that's where it really gets exciting in evangelism, where we show that the questions that culture is raising in its art are actually answered by the gospel and different aspects of the gospel, rather than sort of doing this kind of crunching of gears where we go, oh, let me just change the subject and tell you about this part, the whole gospel in this whole way, which is great, but there are aspects of the gospel that speak to specific questions, and we have to be comfortable, and it's okay to do that, trust me. Okay, so using films in evangelism, we're going to come back to another clip-based discussion in a bit, but I just want to give you a bit of an experience of it. We get starting to get chatting about these things. People like watching films. They enjoy it. It's not as threatening as going to an evangelistic event to hear about the Lamb who saved the world. I love doing evangelistic events. I love speaking just at an event on a topic people are thinking about, and it's a really good way, actually, of getting people engaged and talking about it. But film gives us another way to approach people, another way to create an on-ramp for them to come into the church and hear the gospel. People like talking about films, and often the sorts of people that will be drawn into the arts are different from the people who will come to a debate or a lecture or a talk. And we need to vary our approach so we reach different types of people, because Jesus didn't talk to any two people the same way. So we shouldn't just do the same thing for everybody. And films raise massive questions. Films deal with the big questions of life. Even comedies will quite often touch on massive issues, important questions, which is why great film scholars like Stanley Cavell, just let you take the photo, why great film scholars like Stanley Cavell say, all care about movies, await them, respond to them, remember them, talk to them, and think about them. Films are talking to us, and the films that people choose are communicating ideas and are touching on questions. If we are tempted to think that films are just about entertainment and escapism, then we risk missing, actually, a lot of what's there. Of course we can treat films as entertainment, and often we do. That's the normal way of treating them. And it's okay. It's okay to have some yum-yum culture. But we do also need to be aware of the different influences and ideas around us. So as I'm bringing up my kids, I've got an 11-year-old, 9-year-old, and a 7-year-old. I'm watching movies with them, and I'm asking them questions after we watch things like, what was it that the hero had to do to get to the end there? What was the key to success? Was it teamwork? Was it they had to pray? Was it they had to have some, you know, relic that helped them? What was the redemptive? I don't say it in those words because they go, oh, Dad, another lecture. But I get them thinking about what's there. So we need to be engaging. After all, film directors and expert screenwriters like Sam Peckinpah are very candid with us about what they're trying to do. I didn't want you to enjoy the film. I wanted you to look very closely at your own soul. The other benefit of using film in evangelism is it actually means that our discipleship in the church engages more with the influences that are steering and nudging people's hearts. So it has a secondary effect because it actually means our evangelism, our discipleship reaches further. We engage more deeply with the things that are influencing people. We don't have this sort of two worlds so much of the church and then the world outside. It helps us to get our, it sort of lets us to do a bit of intelligence gathering, it lets us do a bit of engagement, and it helps us to land those questions that culture is asking. So here is another film that raises another question that culture is asking. And this is another experience of a clip-based discussion. I just want to show you this one because I think it raises a very interesting question. So in the film Transcendence, Johnny Depp plays a artificial intelligence expert. And he, in this film, the story of this main character is that he's the target of a criminal militant group who are anti-technology. He's on the verge of developing genuine strong AI, which is going to change the world. but they manage to attack him and they poison him, and he's slowly dying. And as he's slowly dying, his wife, who's also an amazing computer scientist, manages to scan his brain. And she then replicates and transfers the scan into a computer system, into this new system they've developed. And so one of the questions in the film that the film is asking is it really him? Because his body has died and they've buried him. Is it him living on, or is it just a copy of him that seems like him? Is it genuinely him? Can we see and prove and test it's him? Or actually, is this just a simulation? Is he gone? So here in this clip, we see a little bit of a glimpse of how not only this philosophical question is open about identity in a artificial reality, but also how this question of transhumanism, what comes after humanism, this sort of use of technology that sometimes human beings are encouraging each other to employ to take charge of our evolution. This is, if you like, atheism 2.0, where we use technology to steer and guide our own evolution. Examples of this might be genetic editing to stop us aging or to cure diseases. Perhaps at first it would start therapeutically, but then it would begin to look like enhancement. Or the use of nanotechnology to repair things as they age, micro-machines in our skin, either to scan or to repair or to enhance and give us extra abilities. Or the idea of cryonics, where we store our own bodies until such a point where we can be thawed out and then brought back to life. There are a number of people, I think about 1,000 people, who have paid Alcor in order to store their bodies and their brain stems so that in some future moment they'll be able to be thawed out. It's like opening a doorway to try to sort of get your organic matter into the future when technology will be able to bring you back to life. So this film is into all of that and is raising those questions. The answer there is interesting. How are you? Better. And one of the questions, the ethical questions that will be relevant to our use of technology in the future will be, should we aim to make human beings better? Should we seek to expand and have somehow a higher vision or a better vision of the vision that God gave us for how we are as human beings? One transhumanist says this: the opponents are right. We are indeed playing God with our genes. But it is a good thing because God, nature, or whatever we want to call the agencies that have made us, often get it wrong. And it's up to us to correct these mistakes. So transhumanism, if we describe the worldview or the perspective or the philosophy that's starting to be offered through this film or is being discussed or shown in this film, is an idea of unrestricted human progress, that evolution's about everything and we need to take responsibility now for our own evolution. Transhumanists love art and the story of Prometheus stealing fire from the gods. The Greek myth of Prometheus, the titan who defiantly steals fire, enabling progress and civilization. The myth of Prometheus and fire, it is something that opens up all sorts of questions that are really fascinating. Prometheus steals the fire from Zeus, but Zeus finds out and punishes Prometheus by chaining him to a rock and having his liver regrow every day and then an eagle peck it out. Not very nice, pretty horrible punishment. But for transhumanists, this represents a sort of forbidden knowledge, forbidden expertise of use of technology, the stealing of the fire from the gods, power over life and death. And this film, Transcendence, raises these questions in quite a powerful way. It leads us into questions like, what will it mean to be human in the future? What is it actually to be human now and in the future? We could talk about that. I want to move us a little bit further forwards, but that would be a second discussion you could have, just sort of gently sort of getting people to reflect on, what does it mean to be human? What informs the notion of what it means to be human? Just because we've brought up this subject and I'm an apologist, I'm just going to quickly give you a few responses to this conversation. So I think that part of what it means to be human is to be in community. That's how we are made, to be in community, to be embodied, to be concerned and dependent upon others, not to be completely independent or to seek our own complete independence. There needs to be justice and good stewardship around the, you know, use of resources. This technology that we've been describing, gene editing, nanotechnologies, cryonic storage, I mean, these technologies are at the wildly expensive end of technology. We could sink millions and millions, billions and billions. In fact, people are doing that right now into trying to make our lives a little longer, and there would still be millions of people going to bed hungry each night and dying from preventable diseases. I think that's outrageous. That's not just. We shouldn't be using resources like that. And real relationships mean encountering each other as the I-thou, not the I-it or the I-representation-it. Finding ourselves within a bigger story is also important. And our goal should not be to seek complete control over our own fates, but to exist in a trust with God. And so 1 Peter chapter 1 speaks to this fear of death that transhumanism promises to answer or offers to answer. A living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead and into an inheritance that can never perish, spoil, or fade. And though now for a little while you may have had to suffer grief in all kinds of trials, these have come so that the proven genuineness of your faith, you are receiving now the end result of your faith, the salvation of your soul. So Jesus' promise is that he will rescue us from death. We don't need to use technology to do that ourselves. So cinematic outreach and using films in evangelism is a great way to approach people. I want now to just deepen your own viewing skills a little bit, just to push you. Some of you might be experienced in your views, in your ability to recognize themes in film, but I want to take us back to that clip we watched at the beginning when I was challenging you to have confidence to say, what was it about? So when you watch something, the primary question you want to be asking is, what is this about? What is it saying? What's the topic, at least, the general topic area that it's about? Now, you might just start off by saying it's about hardship in war, or it's about moral dilemmas. That is awesome. That's a great first place to get to be able to be confident to articulate that this is what it's actually about. You're not saying you have a unique insight into the director's mind. You don't have to go that far or be that detailed, but you're just saying this is what it's about, this is its topic area. And that's hugely empowering to start to use film in these sorts of ways that I'm encouraging you to. And then the second order of questions are, where do I see truth here? Where do I see something that's right, where it's picking up a question that's actually a really good, fair question? Transcendence isn't a Christian film. It's not made by Christians, it's not written by Christians, it's not prayed by Christians or paid for by Christians, but it's got some really good, valid questions in there. And we can say, yes, those are questions worth asking. Those are questions worth pursuing. So where do we see truth here? But then where do we also see things that are not true? I have some principles that I like to keep in mind when I'm using and engaging with film, and they are primarily to let the art speak on its own terms, not to try to make it say something it's not saying. And that comes from a confidence knowing kind of what the ballpark is of what it is saying. That's okay, because we're building up those skills now, but we're not just sort of shoehorning it into saying something it's not saying. I think we should approach it by asking questions. And the third one is really important. We've got to be positive. I think we've got to recognize that we have a little bit of a problem with cultural criticism from coming from the church to culture. And it sounds a bit negative when we engage with culture. We need to sometimes grin and bear it through a little bit of swearing and a little bit of violence. I'm not saying go out there and use Tarantino or go out there and show horrific, explicit sex scenes. That's not what I'm advocating. I'm just saying we need to engage a bit more with secular film and be less judgy, not to have those sort of goggles where there's a little alarm at the bottom for swearing and blasphemy and a little alarm for maybe a sort of, you know, a bit of sex. I think we need to be responsible, not to engage in things that war against our souls, but we also need to actually recognize that we live in the real world and we should not pretend that we're not watching these things every night anyway on streaming services. Let's just be honest. Everybody's watching it. Let's engage. So be careful of things which war against your souls, but we should be more positive and we should celebrate the great works of art that actually are occurring in even long-form streaming, you know, popcorn TV that we watch. Great writing, great acting, great cinematography is being deployed in many, many things. And we can be positive about that. And that is an engaging and positive conversation for people to be part of. If it's just cultural judgment and we're just sort of hammering on about specific sins, then that is not an encouraging or happy conversation to invite somebody into. So be positive. I hope I've been clear. Keep a biblical perspective on human beings, which helps us to be positive, actually. This is a structure that can help us to stay in that positive frame of mind. So first of all, human beings, all of them, bear God's image. We imprint and represent and show God's image to each other and reveal God's image to each other as we live. Secondly, human beings are rebels against God. And so film is great and is an expression of our image bearing in creation. It's an expression of God who made us, who is a creator. Film is a great thing, a good thing because of that. But film also contains great darkness. Culture contains things which will damage and mess up your soul if you watch the wrong things. You have to be wise. So I'm both the extreme end of pessimism and caution and cynicism about what we watch, and I'm the extreme end of optimism and excitement. Let's engage positively. Put me in a box if you can. Humans still long for God. Humans still long for God, and we will see all of these echoes through film. What are we looking for? When I watch a film, what am I trying to spot? I'm looking for truth. I'm looking for what they're saying that's a fair question, that's right. I'm looking for when the main protagonist actually gets it right. They start doing the right thing. They confess something. They take responsibility for something. They own something. They recognize where actually something is right and needs to be stood up to. They have some courage. Or I'm looking for error, for blindness, for misdirection, for idolatry, for willful rebellion, for people trying to pull the wool over other people's eyes. And then I'm also looking for the possibility of grace, the breakthrough moment of hope. The sorts of questions you can ask, which will stir you and people around you to just think a bit more deeply about film. You might be watching a DVD with some friends, and you could throw questions like this around. Very simple. Would I give the film a thumbs up or a thumbs down? What's my favorite theme in the film? What do I find coming out of it? Do these ideas ring true or false? Who's my favorite character? It's not that complicated just to go beyond the yay, boo reaction to film. And I think we can. And I think that's fun to do that. Thank you so much for coming along, for asking questions. If I can encourage you in the future, you know my email now. I hope this has been stimulating and encourage you to use film in all the different ways that it can be used.